Lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land.
Throws across his body, and he got it! We're going to wave a can around third. Throw from the outfield is up the line, inside the park, home run! Deep, gone! Whoa! Up and he makes a catch up against the wall, and he's gonna watch it fly. Strike three called. He got him on strikes.
Welcome to The Voice of the Turtle, a podcast feature of West of Woodward, online at westofwoodward.com and also on Twitter at VOTT Podcast. I'm your host, Hook Slide, along with co-host Rob Rojacki of blessyouboys.com and also beyondtheboxscore.com. And Rob, I feel like I have a bit of a confession to make. It was at least 2 months, I think, ago on the show, and several times 2 months ago, that I said, how awesome would it be, because I'm a chaos enthusiast and I love just, you know, apocalyptic things happening and Armageddon coming. And I said at that time, wouldn't it be great if the Chicago Cubs made it all the way to the World Series and then somehow lost? And now I'm kind of feeling like, as we record this Tuesday night, Game 6 is coming up. The Cleveland Indians have a 3-2 lead. The Cubs could very well lose the World Series tonight. I got to tell you, I had no idea at that time when I said that, that the possibility was there that it would be the Cleveland Indians to knock the Cubs out of it. I feel like I, what kind of penance can I do at this point to make up for that absolutely awful statement that I made?
You could, I don't know, get a bucket of KFC and think it's a live chicken.
And do what with it?
And we'll sacrifice it like a live chicken.
Okay.
Come on, I'm trying to make a major league reference here,
all right? Right. Got it. Yes, the KFC, the live chicken. It's been a while since I've seen Major League.
Such a great movie.
It was a great movie.
With Cleveland in a position to win a championship.
It was a great movie until this happened. I'm not sure I can ever watch that movie again if they do, in fact, somehow defeat the Chicago Cubs. I could have literally dealt with almost any other team doing this. I can't handle the Indians being the team that knocks the Cubs out of the World Series.
I'm not really that bent out of shape about it. Just because, you know, like the Tigers and Indians, yeah, they've gone back and forth and yeah, we're supposed to be rivals and everything, but like there's never really been that moment. Like with the Twins, there's like 1987 and 2009 and all those other times that the Twins and, you know, have kind of knocked the Tigers out of contention. The Royals were a little bit pesky for a while there, even though they weren't very good. They kind of had played their role as spoiler from time to time, but the Indians, like, they've never really done that. Like they were first and second in 2011, but the Tigers blew past them. 2013, the Tigers always kind of held them at bay. And even this year it was like, yeah, the Indians are annoying, but still, I never really got a chance to work up as much hate for them as I have for other teams.
I think for me this year, it's because they were the one thing standing between the Tigers and a postseason for the Detroit Tigers. They were the obstacle and just so thoroughly destroyed us this year that's frustrating to me. And, you know, I have a hard time forgetting what happened a couple of years ago when Detroit was going through bankruptcy and the fans at Progressive Field were chanting, Detroit is bankrupt. You know, that was their thing. It was annoying. But I got to tell you, I have this like kind of love-hate relationship with Terry Francona because I think he's really, really smart and really, really good. And I kind of want to see him succeed, but just do it with somebody else, not the Indians.
Well, we've also talked about some of the other players on their team, like Mike Napoli. He's kind of fun. Francisco Lindor is just too good for me to work up for. He's just so good. And that rotation is pretty dominant, too. Trevor Bauer is just kind of like goofy and somewhat harmless because he always kind of sucks against the Tigers, so I don't mind him so much either.
Well, this is the reality, and as we said, we're recording this about a half hour before Game 6 kicks off, and we wanted to do a somewhat truncated short show today, so we have a chance to actually watch Game 6 of the World Series. So as promised last week, we will be replaying the interview that Rob and I held with Dan Dickerson back in February. I believe it was February 27th of this year, right when the Tigers were on the cusp of spring training. The season was about to begin. We got Dan Dickerson to come on a podcast and share his thoughts, his predictions for the 2016 season. It's kind of cool, Rob. It's kind of like a little time capsule digging that up, and I listened to that interview today and kind of went back over it, and I was grinning like an idiot the entire time because, man, hindsight is fun.
It was fun just to talk to Dan Dickerson. I remember listening to that interview. It was about a month ago because I was looking back for some of the other things we had done, like season predictions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I got to that interview, and I just kind of stopped and listened to the whole thing because it was just fun talking to Dan Dickerson.
I loved and you'll hear this, you know, in the interview itself coming up here in a little bit. But, you know, the part where he's talking about calculating the Tigers' win totals based on WAR, and he kind of explains what the calculation is for doing that based on individual player WAR, and just how big of a role Jordan Zimmermann played in that calculation, how much WAR, wins above replacement, we were all expecting out of Jordan Zimmermann. To look back on that now with hindsight and see that Zimmermann only pitched half of the innings that he normally pitches, and to think, man, that was a huge part of this season not ending in the Tigers going to the postseason.
It really was. I mean, if you look back at all the things, and like a healthy Jordan Zimmermann is kind of like the easiest calculation or addition to make to this team. And then, yeah, if they get that, and a healthy Jordan Zimmermann who's pitching well, because like even through some of those innings that you had mentioned, he wasn't very good in probably the last third of them or so. And so getting a healthy and productive Jordan Zimmermann there is probably the difference between the Tigers at least making the postseason. Who knows if they go anywhere with it, but at least getting into that wild card game and then sitting home like they were this year.
Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe they make the postseason, but as I've watched this World Series unfold with the way the Indians have played and the Cubs have played, and there is a qualitative difference watching these teams play and watching the way the Tigers played this year and just thinking, man, they probably wouldn't have made it past either one of these teams, quite honestly. There's just an appreciable difference the way that these teams are playing right now versus what we saw all year from Detroit.
There's an appreciable difference in how these teams are constructed compared to the Tigers. I mean, you look at the Cubs, and that roster is so deep. I mean, they've used so many different lineups, and there's just all of this discussion before these games about, you know, how are the teams going to match up and the lineups and whatnot, and what are they going to use. Yeah, the bullpens kind of get shortened a little bit, but that happens in the playoffs. But just having the positional versatility to, you know, be able to match up platoon splits or use a pinch hitter in a tight situation, the Tigers just didn't have that. And while that's fine during the playoff series when everyone's healthy, it really kind of bogs you down during the regular season. And it's a big reason why the Tigers weren't able to get through it, because you have injuries and whatnot, and those injury replacements were just so bad for Detroit this year.
Well, like I said, it's very much kind of a time capsule opening to hear this Dan Dickerson interview. I think you listeners will really enjoy kind of going back and reliving that, the expectation and the optimism and all of that. Some of it's kind of funny, some of it's kind of sad, but it's a good time. But to not leave you, dear listeners, completely in a lurch, to make this show somewhat time relevant, we are going to field a few listener questions before we get to that interview. So coming up, we'll cut right to the mob scene segment and handle these questions, and then we will cut straight to the Dan Dickerson interview. So coming up next, into the mob scene at home, beer me some good news right after the break.
Swinging a fly ball to left field. This one's deep, going back. Gentry at defense. It's gone! Wow. It's gone! A walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth for Jose Davis. Incredible! Around third, into the mob scene at home.
And so into the mob scene at home we go. Even though this is a shortened show, and it's mostly a replay show because we have a World Series that we want to watch, we did decide to handle a couple of listener questions here, so let's get this party started. I've got like, what, 5, 6, 7 questions here, Rob, from our listeners. Let's go right to it with TX Sparty on Twitter wants to know, what is the best Michigan brewery that is not Founders or Bell's? I'm very curious to hear your answer on this as someone who lives outside of Michigan.
I kind of have two answers here. I am partially obligated to mention Arcadia Ales because his family actually owns that brewery. Haven't gotten too much free beer from them, which, you know, being the fact that we were in a fraternity is probably a good thing. It's probably a reason why they're still in business, to be honest, not giving us any free beer. But they've produced some solid stuff. I like their summer ale, Whitson. It's, you know, kind of similar to Oberon, maybe not quite as good, but overall pretty solid choice. And they've got a lot of heavier beers as well that are good, good kind of around this time of year as it gets a little bit colder. The other one I would say is Atwater Brewing down. I think they're down in Detroit. They produce a couple solid ones too. Another good summer beer is the Dirty Blonde. And I'm listing off the summer beers because those are the last ones I had when I was back in Michigan over Labor Day weekend. Once I get back for Thanksgiving, I'll be able to kind of update more on the fall and winter seasonal offerings.
Now, where is Arcadia located again? Remind me.
Like a Battle Creek, Kalamazoo area, okay, somewhere, yeah, in there. I think Battle Creek is where they're located.
For some reason, I was thinking they were in Ann Arbor, but I'm thinking of, I may be confusing them with Arbor Brewing, which is another great local to the Detroit area.
Yep.
So, of course, me living in the West Side, you know, Grand Rapids, was named Beer City USA a couple years ago. It's because we just have an embarrassment of riches in terms of breweries here that are popping up all the time. I'm going to go ahead and recommend a couple of very, very, very local breweries that might not even have distribution across the state. One of them is just down the street from the West Michigan Whitecaps Stadium there at Fifth Third. It's called Perrin Brewing, and that is it's a great, great company. They have so many good things. Their Perrin Black is amazing. The Little Grizz beer, which is, I think that's one of those oak-aged, you know, rum barrel aged beers, very, very, very good. Perrin's just got a lot of good things going. Their brown is very good. And the other one is kind of an unknown here in Grand Rapids called Hideout. And it's a real hole-in-the-wall place just down the street from the stadium. But they do growler specials, and they have a hazelnut that is just knock your socks off amazing. If you're ever in the Grand Rapids area, look up Hideout Brewing. But then, you know, if we're being limited to not Founders and not Bells, I get it. Like, Founders makes all awesome beers, but they've kind of gotten a little bit, I don't know, too big for their britches. They've kind of become too nationalized. Like, they still make awesome beer, but you can't get a seat in the brewery these days.
I mean, I like that they're becoming a little bit bigger because I can actually get Founders for the most part out here. I can get some Bells stuff too, and it's nice to be able to get some of that out this way. We get a lot of different beers from a lot of parts of the country out here in D.C. It's really kind of a nice area for it. There's not a huge local scene. They have a couple decent breweries around the area, but to get such wide distribution from throughout the country is a lot of fun.
A lot of great beer happening here in Michigan. So if you're outside the state, make it a point to come visit. Give me a holler. I'll show you what's up. All right. Second question from Michael Litzner on Twitter wants to know, what year or years do you see top Tigers prospects getting up to the bigs and sticking with the team? 2017 and 18 seem likely?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Kristen Stewart kind of popping up as potentially a guy who might be up in 2017. It seems like the Tigers are pretty high on him. He's at the Arizona Fall League right now, I think doing pretty well. I think he was named to the Fall Stars roster or yep, whatever it's called. I watched a game. They actually had a game live on MLB.com. Naturally, Tim Tebow was playing in the game. But on the other side were the Salt River Rafters, I think is the name of the team. Mm-hmm. And with that, the Tigers prospects in that game. And so Stewart, I think, went like 0 for 3 in that game. But two of those were just absolute lasers that he hit right at people. And so it was nice to see that. And I wish they would put more of those games on. You know, I mean, I don't get why they don't televise more of these games, whether it's, you know, the Arizona Fall League or spring training. Like, all you got to do is set up a camera, like, in the press box. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, and I feel like they would do that more if it weren't conflicting with the World Series. Like, if you could just flip over to MLB Network, say, you know, and they weren't worrying about World Series pregame and postgame and all that kind of stuff, I feel like they would be showing more of that because they seem to do that you know, like during the summertime when baseball takes a break for the All-Star break and you got the, you know, the futures game going on or whatever, they'll show it then. But outside of that, man, you got to almost, I'm not even sure if those games are on the MILB TV package or not, but would love to see some more of those. You bring up Stewart, you know, and his performance has been a little bit under. I was just talking with Emily Walden about this yesterday, the fact that Jacoby Jones didn't make that all-star roster, the fall star roster, but Kristen Stewart did, despite, I think, Jones having slightly better numbers. And I do think it comes down to Stewart, I think, has been showing better progress or process along the way. We talked last week about how Al Avila sees him as a potential you know, full-time outfielder for the Tigers, even as early as 2017, provided that he can show something, you know, during spring training. Outside of that, obviously, we've talked about Joe Jimenez being someone that's probably going to stick in 2017, certainly by 2018. Outside of those two obvious picks, I would say, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Michael Gerber show up in 2018. I would have picked Derek Hill because he's another top prospect, but with having Tommy John this year, he's going to miss all of next year. You're probably not even going to see him hit the big leagues in 2018. He might be 2019. So those,
I mean, and with him at this point, as sad it is to say, you might, I mean, it's a question of if we see him rather than when. So we'll hopefully everything goes well after that surgery and he's able to recover and kind of get back into, you know, the swing of things. But especially offensively with all the development that he needs to make, you know, he's lost, you know, a couple years due to injury now, and he's going to miss a part of 2017 too. So he's got a long road ahead of him, but hopefully he can kind of bounce back. As far as Jones, I want to talk about him a little bit because I saw over at, I can't remember if it was Fangraphs or Baseball Prospectus, but they had talked about, one of their prospect writers had talked about how Jones had kind of taken a step forward as a prospect, like a couple of his tools, like the hit tool and whatnot, had taken a little bit of a step forward compared to where he was at the Arizona Fall League last year. And that was good to hear.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that, you know, we got to see a couple of at-bats, you know, during the Major League Baseball season. Obviously, he had those, you know, couple of storybook at-bats to start out with, and then obviously kind of fell off a cliff a little bit as pitchers began to make their adjustments, and maybe the big lights, you know, of the big city kind of got to him a little bit. But he's one of those guys that I still hold out a lot of hope for, that he's going to be a lot more than a Andrew Romine type. You know, he's going to be more than a utility guy, even though he can play multiple positions. I think they're going to end up sticking him in the outfield at some point.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him be able to stick in a position. It seems like he's been playing mostly center field in the Arizona Fall League to kind of get more reps there. The Tigers may see him as kind of the heir apparent to Cameron Maben in center field if he's able to kind of get a hold on that position and do fairly well, because the speed is real. The power is real. It's really just a matter of him being able to improve his pitch recognition a little bit and hit for a high enough average to support the power that he's going to have. Because this is a guy that, you know, he could, maybe he's not going to hit like 20, 25 home runs or anything, but with his speed, he could have, you know, at least 10 home runs. He's got that kind of power. I mean, he hit a ball, what, to the Triples Alley in Comerica Park, as well as, you know, 25, 30 doubles in a year, including some that he would just be able to leg out because of that great speed. And hopefully he can kind of turn the corner a little bit as a hitter and be able to support some of those other great tools that he has.
So all in all, I think the answer is, you know, 2017 is a big question mark as to some of the, whether some of these guys are going to actually hit the big club. If they do, I think it might be early for a couple of them. But more realistically, 2018 is when we really start to see some of the prospect fruit come to fruition there. Chief Broom on Twitter says, what's the next Moneyball market inefficiency that's waiting to be exploited? And can the Tigers take advantage?
Well, the one that a lot of teams are kind of starting to take advantage and explore a little bit more right now is health. You know, teams that are able to keep their players healthy, keep them on the field more often and avoid injuries, avoid stints on the DL. That's really kind of the, I guess, next frontier for baseball. There's a lot of, you know, research being put into play now and teams collecting more and more data on players. There's also kind of a little bit of an ethical debate with that as well, is like how much should the players have to reveal and be able to reveal to teams, you know, in terms of that, you know, maybe they use that against them in contract negotiations or something like that. That's kind of another debate for another time. But the one of our writers at Bless You Boys took a look at some of, you know, the injury data from the last several years and found that the Tigers have actually been one of the most, you know, healthy and productive teams in all of baseball. It seemed like the Tigers had a lot of bad luck with injuries this year. And, you know, compared to the rest of the league, that wasn't necessarily true. They were like middle of the pack, maybe even slightly luckier or, I guess, less injured. But compared to what they had been in recent years, as, you know, one of the healthiest teams in the major leagues, if not the healthiest overall, the Tigers have, you know, they were off that pace a little bit this year. And so, you know, since, I think it was since 2010, over, you know, the 5-6 seasons since then, the Tigers were actually, I think, the least injured team in all of baseball. And that helps when you have, you know, an ace like Justin Verlander taking the mound every game, Miguel Cabrera playing through some injuries and just not hitting the DL very much. So being able to have those guys healthy as well as a lot of the other ones has really been a good thing for them. And now, is that just luck? Is that anything that they're doing behind the scenes? Who knows? But hopefully they're kind of getting out ahead, whether it's through data or just, you know, a talented team of medical professionals leading the way. It seems like they're doing something right so far.
There is a huge market there to be exploited in terms of collecting the bio data that we talk about, and even neuro data, watching the way the brain waves work, and you know, this kind of thing. It's definitely coming. In the meanwhile, I think one of the, you know, quote unquote inefficiencies, and it's an inefficiency just because the Tigers have been so far behind the eight ball. Other teams are already doing this, but I've talked about this so many times, it's like a broken record at this point. That they are beginning to collect TrackMan data, spin rate data, HitFX, you know, StatCast, this kind of thing. And they are doing this at the minor league levels. They're definitely doing it in West Michigan. I don't know if they've fully implemented it at like AA and Advanced A and so forth, but they're obviously making steps to do that. And what that is going to do, it may not give them a leg up on the competition, but it will at least help them to keep pace with the competition, especially as it concerns rating their prospects and developing future prospects. They're going to be able to get a lot deeper into, you know, under the hood on some of these guys, some of the pitchers, the hitters, fielders, all of this. And I think we're going to start seeing a much better, stronger crop of prospects coming up through the ranks over the next several years. Again, that's not a market inefficiency that will give them a leg up over the competition, but it is an inefficiency in the sense that they haven't been doing it. And they will start doing that. I think that puts them in much better position to keep pace with the Cubs, to keep pace with the Cardinals, or whatever other team that we talk about. Like, how do you keep just cranking out prospect after prospect in all this depth? That time is coming, and it's because of those particular stats that they're starting to measure, I think. John Marlette, Chubby Rainmaker on Twitter, wants to know, how much are people going to hate it when the Tigers sign Alex Avila in the offseason?
I feel like we answered this question last week or something similar, but I'm very similar. Excited. I'm excited for it. I think the Tigers would do well to add Avila. You know, he complements McCann very, very well because he hits a lot better against right-handed pitchers, whereas McCann hits a lot better against lefties. Obviously, with catchers, there's not going to be a perfect split, but overall, if you're able to give, you know, Avila more at-bats against righties and McCann more at-bats against lefties, I think you're doing all right. And Avila bounced back a little bit this year. He hit a little bit better. I mean, his average only went up from 191 to 213, but he had an on-base percentage of 359 and a 732 OPS. He was an above-average hitter in terms of both OPS plus and WRC plus. You know, behind the plate, he was okay. He only caught 22% of the base runners that are attempted base stealers, but there are a lot of different factors that go into that too, and it was kind of a small sample size for him since he only played in 54 games. He again battled some injuries this year, but I think that'll also kind of keep the contract price down a little bit for the Tigers so they can go out and get a cheap backup. There are a few guys like him available. I mean, you have him, you have Jared Saltalamacchia, who, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing back. And there's also Jason Castro, who's, you know, another kind of a Avila-type catcher. And so there are a few guys out there on the market that I think the Tigers could pick up as a kind of a backup or a complement to McCann. And all, those three guys all hit fairly well against right-handed pitching.
And as far as people, you know, how much they're going to hate it, you know, I feel like there's really two camps in Tiger fandom. There's the group of us that always kind of appreciated what Alex Avila brought to the table, not only in terms of his defense and pitch framing and his ability to work well with the pitching staff, but also his on-base percentage, ability to draw walks, and occasionally come through with, you know, a nice little pop in the bat. He never had great batting average, but, you know, it seems like when he did get the hits, they were when you needed them, kind of Saltalamacchia-esque in that way. And if you can spell Saltalamacchia-esque, I will pay you untold sums of money. But there's that part of the fan base that kind of always liked him and I think would be thrilled to have him back. There's the other part of the fan base that always hated him because they never saw any of those qualities. They only saw the, you know, 210 batting average or whatever it was and felt like he was just, you know, the cry of nepotism. He's only there because Al Avila runs the show kind of thing. And so believe me, if Alex Avila gets re-signed to the team, oh, good God, they are going to come out of the woodworks, these trolls, and, you know, tell you that it's a conspiracy. And I think the cries for Al Avila's firing will get even louder once that happens. So I'm all for it. It's chaos.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nope. But you also get some of those fans who will hate every second of Alex Avila coming back. They're also going to hate any other backup catcher that gets signed because he's not going to hit for a high average, and he's probably not going to be that great of a hitter. And so either that or you get like a Brian Peña type situation where he overperforms for a year and everyone loves him and wants him to be the starter.
I would take Brian Peña back in a heartbeat.
He's fun. Just, he was fun.
Yeah, just for pure explosive.
If there's a position where you could just like have fun with, you might as well get Brian Peña.
Why not? He does the home run trot in like 8 seconds, which is faster than any major leaguer runs the bases when they mean to. You know, he's like, it's great.
And you also like know exactly when he gets on Twitter because he retweets every single mention that he gets.
My timeline is filled with 20, 30, 40 retweets. It's, yep, Brian Peña just signed on. Awesome. All right. Todd Drenth wants to know, is it time to start stocking up on alcoholic beverages in preparation for the winter meetings?
Yeah, I mean, you should always kind of be stocking up on alcoholic beverages for any number of things. I mean, you've either got Tigers baseball or the off season or the winter meetings or the time after the winter meetings where there's nothing going on or spring training where there's not really much going on and you can't actually watch the games or Tigers baseball again. It's kind of a never ending cycle.
Really? Yeah. It's kind of an alcoholic creed. I'm not sure why you're not stocked up already, but if I try to read some meaning into this question, that it's really kind of a question of, you know, are the Tigers going to start making major moves at the winter meetings or before? I would say stock up now, because I really think once the World Series ends, there are certain decisions that have to be made within a couple of days, in terms of picking up Maben's option, in terms of picking up K-Rod's option. Some of that news is going to start trickling out within a week. And the way that Al Avila ran things last year, he was first to market very quickly with signing Zimmerman, with doing this stuff like before Thanksgiving even dropped. You know, like he signed a bunch of players and stuff, traded players. So, yeah, stock up now. I don't think he's going to wait till the winter meetings before he starts making some of the big moves that we need to talk about. Jan Dodge wants to know, I live in Metro New York City. Talk here is the Yankees go after Andrew Miller and bring him back. I don't know Miller's situation. Can the Indians afford him?
Yeah, he's only getting paid, what, $9 million a year for the next couple of years? So the Indians can definitely afford him. Whether or not they decide to move on from him or what, that remains to be seen. But it's not a matter of him getting too pricey for them at all. I think that he, like, if they went into next year with like the same salary structure, he would actually be like their highest paid player. That's how low their payroll is right now and how little that they have to pay some of these guys. Some of them are on some very team friendly contracts. And we'll see what happens. You know, they may or may not decide to move on from him if they want to bring back someone like Mike Napoli or sign another big bat to fit into that lineup, because Napoli's going to be gone, and I think there are a couple other free agents there too. I can't remember if Rajay Davis got a 1 or 2 year deal. He may be on the way out as well. And so we'll see exactly what they do, but with that young, cheap starting rotation right now, they don't necessarily have to move on from Maben right away.
And I was sitting here thinking about that question and trying to put myself in the mindset of an Indians GM and thinking, okay, they traded some good prospects to get Andrew Miller, and they have him under contract, I think, for the next 2 or 3 years, at least two. So in a sense, he's already kind of paid for. I'm trying to think of what would possess a GM to say we need to get rid of him. The only thing I can think of is if they needed to fill a huge gap, like if they needed a, you know, superstar in the outfield or something, or they needed a superstar starting pitcher that they needed to pay millions of dollars in a multi, you know, year contract, the kind of thing that you would need to give up an Andrew Miller in a trade to get. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Tigers gave Miller up to get Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah. You don't. Well, I don't necessarily think that would happen, because they're going to get Michael Brantley back from injury anyway.
Well, exactly.
So that's already kind of your big addition right there. The only thing I would see them doing is, like, if they, you know, you said they traded away all those prospects to get Miller, is, you know, getting maybe not those same guys, but some other top prospects back in return, and almost, you know, just kind of doing a prospect swap plus Andrew Miller for 2 months while you go collect championship. That would kind of be a nice little swindle on their part, but I think it would have to be a bit of an overpay, almost kind of like a trade deadline type deal in terms of price for them to part with Miller this offseason.
Yeah, I guess the kind of trade that I'm thinking of is more along the lines of what the Tigers did in 2014 during the trade deadline, when they went and got David Price and had to give up, you know, Drew Smyly and Andrew Jackson and a prospect. You know, that kind of a major move where you're trying to get an absolute star on your team for whatever reason, and, you know, to get him requires giving up a huge piece like Andrew Miller, and they certainly have enough bullpen depth that they could afford it, but it's kind of like you've already paid for him.
why bother giving him up? As you mentioned, they've already got a nice, young, cost-controlled starting rotation. What in the world would they ever need to go out and do that kind of shopping for?
Yeah, and if we're talking about the Yankees specifically, I don't really know that there's a fit there other than someone like Gary Sanchez, the Yankees, rookie catcher, but I don't see the Yankees parting with him.
The Yankees almost don't need Miller, right? I mean, we talk about how deep their bullpen is anyway, you know. I know they gave up Chapman too, you know, but they seem to do well with bullpen pieces. It's pretty deep. So, yeah, I would imagine that Andrew Miller is with the Indians for the foreseeable future. We'll see what happens once he hits the free agent market and commands millions upon millions for his awesome performance this year. But until then. All right, final question from Brett Yoder on Twitter. How the heck have we not won a World Series in the last 10 years?
I don't know, man. Like, seriously, I don't know.
It's bizarre. I'm not going to lie. You talk about going back 10 years to 2006 when the Tigers, you know, made their first World Series in many, many years and managed to only win, you know, one game. And, you know, then they had that superior run of four straight AL Central titles. And really, they only made it to one World Series in that stretch. And in that World Series, they didn't even manage to win one game. And the only thing I keep going back to is the team was at that time constructed kind of top heavy. Your Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder, Victor Martinez, Johnny Peralta, slugger kind of lineup that just did not have enough balance elsewhere. You had the star-studded rotation, but you just didn't have a solid bullpen behind it. You didn't have... Look, in the postseason, as you've seen, even with the Chicago Cubs this year, runs are always at a premium. And so unless you have, you know, kind of a team that can put pressure on the other team's defense by running the bases well, by stealing, by, you know, advancing on sac flies, by going first to third on singles, that kind of thing, and an absolute lights-out bullpen that can come in the fifth, sixth inning, it's very hard to do, what the Tigers are trying to do. So fingers crossed that... You know, Al Avila starts to kind of try to construct that kind of team.
It would be nice. We'll see exactly what happens with that. I think they need to, you know, dump some of these, you know, kind of slower, more plodding type guys if they're going to get to that point. But it won't be easy, and I don't know if it'll happen this offseason. But hey, all it takes is getting into the playoffs, and then anything can really happen from there. So we'll see.
It is going to take way more than this offseason, I think, to get there. And just even looking at, you know, the Indians, the way they're constructed, the Cubs, the way they're constructed, the way the Royals were constructed the last couple of years, kind of put me in mind of 1984 and the way that team was constructed. And I thought, man, there are a lot of similarities. If you go back to that 84 team, it was largely made up of younger guys that the Tigers had drafted. You know, Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, Kurt Gibson, all guys that had come up through the system and were relatively young at the time. Nobody on that team is what I would call a superstar. You know, nobody that was like, you know, oh, yeah, 50 home runs, 350 batting average, you know, that kind of, you know, your Miguel Cabrera type. But what they were all very, very competent contributors up and down the lineup, all guys that could, you know, I want to say when I went back over the stats some time ago, there was nobody on that team that had more than 100 RBIs. But what you did have was a full roster of guys that gave you 75 RBIs up and down.
They had a lot of two-way players on that roster as well. I mean, you have Trammell and Whitaker, obviously, a couple of Hall of Famers, but then others like Chet Lemon, who, you know, I don't necessarily know what the defensive numbers say, but I don't entirely trust, you know, some of those that are kind of retroactively looking back on that. Mm-hmm. But a guy in Lance Parrish, who by all accounts was, you know, a solid defensive catcher, definitely a plus offensively, sure, as well as some others on that roster too. And so that's kind of the way the game is going now, is that you need these two-way players, guys who are able to not only play offense, but also play defense in this, you know, kind of offensively starved era, and being able to help out the pitchers that aren't necessarily getting a ton of strikeouts, because I think the defense has played a big role in why the Tigers haven't necessarily won a World Series yet, too.
Yeah, that's another big part of it. That 84 team, you talk about two-way players. I mean, Whitaker and Trammell could give you base hits. They could run. They could steal. Gibson certainly was, you know, a stolen base threat, first, third, and a single type guy. They all played excellent defense. And guess what? They had Willie Hernandez. They had the guy who could come in the seventh or even the sixth inning and just pitch the rest of the game and do it for you. Just that kind of a team. Not loaded with stars, but very, very well balanced, good on all sides of the ball. I think they're going to have to. And again, it's no surprise that most of those guys came up through the Tigers system and were drafted. And, you know, I think it's going to take something like that, some kind of a renaissance like that, to get them back to that spot. And it's not going to be done in 2017, I don't think.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it could still end up being kind of one of those years where just everything breaks their way. I mean, you look at that 84 team, and there are a lot of guys who had some career years that year. That's just kind of what it takes. And so there's really no predicting that. You know, hopefully this whole run of AL Central teams in the World Series continues, and the Tigers are the next one up next year.
I would be more than happy with that result. So with that, we close the mob scene segment. We are going to kick you over now to the February 27, 2016 interview with Dan Dickerson. Should be a good time. Any last comments, Rob, before we get out of here for the night?
Nope, game's on. Let's go watch that.
Go Cubs. All right. Folks, enjoy Dan Dickerson right after the break.
3 now. Here's the 2-2. Oh, boy. Curveball grabbed the outside corner. Victor not happy. Pitch that he felt went around the plate. You rarely see Victor complain. Brad Ausmus better get out there quickly. Oh, ah. And Victor got tossed. Wow.
And welcome back for the break. We're ready to wrap up this show with the seventh inning Kvetch. As you know, this is the portion of the show that we sometimes reserve for special guests and interviews. And we do have a special guest with us today. Dan Dickerson joins us for this segment. Of course, you know Dan as the play-by-play announcer on the Detroit Tigers radio network, the voice of summer. Dan, it is truly a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me back. I always like talking baseball to you guys.
You hear that, Rob? That's Dan Dickerson's voice. That sounds like baseball to me.
Sounds like spring to me.
There you go. Well, let's jump right in with the hard questions. Let's just go right to the numbers. Most recently, Baseball Prospectus released their PECOTA projections today, and they, along with other systems, have the Tigers finishing lower than I expected. They had them finishing in third place with 79 wins. That's all. Do you agree with these systems, Dan, these projections that are coming out, or do you think the Tigers are primed for bigger and better things?
Funny, I was just having a discussion with this with somebody else about projection systems, because exactly what you're talking about. All the projection systems are coming out, started with FanGraphs, kind of below 500. Sports Illustrated ranked their 30 major league teams from 30-1 in their most recent issue, and had the Tigers at 16, and ESPN ranked their 30-1, and they're at 19. I mean, everybody's kind of got them in that same at 500 or below. And the thing that, when I look at projection systems, I mean, they're all kind of the same, and they all have a sameness to them, because they're all looking at a player's career, recent history, age, health, and you understand how they end up kind of being the same. And to me, the fun is, because we all like to figure this out, right? We all like to project. We all like, especially if we're Tiger fans, whatever fan you are, but I like trying to figure it out. So I've just been looking in recent days. What is the upside for this team? And you look at what's the possibility? What's been the highest? I like to look at WAR, because I truly believe if you can figure out what a player's WAR is, and you can do that for a whole team, good luck doing it. But if you can, you'll have a pretty good feel for where they're going to end up with total wins. Now, if you look at the upside for all of these Tigers players and where they've hit in their careers, I mean, Miguel Cabrera has been a 7 WAR player. Ian Kendall has been a 5 WAR player for 3 years running now, 5 WAR plus. Upton is at, you know, 3.5 to 4 WAR. Zimmerman, 4 WAR. I mean, there is talent on this team. So you get into the what-ifs. And to me, the biggest ifs are Aníbal Sánchez, Victor Martinez, health and getting back to productivity for both. And then there are some other, you know, is the bullpen as good as we think it is? So I think it's fun, because I don't think projection systems can account for guys coming back from injury. I don't think they can account for a guy like J.D. Martinez, who's changed his swing 2 years ago at age 26 and turned into a monster hitter. And I don't think they can sometimes take into account motivation, intangibles. Kansas City is a great example. I think the projection systems have missed to the tune of 30-some wins for both Pittsburgh and KC in recent years. Because sometimes you just can't predict how a team and the pieces are going to fit together. It's a fun exercise, but the way the pieces fit, the chemistry. There is something to that. Ask anybody. And there's just so many little things that can and can't go right. And it all adds up. So I don't know. I took a stab at it the other day. I came up with a rough number. It seemed a little bit high, but it's fun to try. It's fun to try to figure it out. I think the projection systems in the Tigers' case are low. I really do. I think they're. I don't think they're taking into account Miguel Cabrera, Justin Verlander coming back strong. You know, guys who are on Hall of Fame career tracks tend to age better through their 30s than other guys, and those two were on Hall of Fame career tracks. Until Miguel still is, until injuries. So I don't know. It's fun to figure it out, but I think they're missing some things with this Tiger team, and I do think the upside is absolutely there for a 90-win season.
So you're calling 90 wins?
Yeah, I was at roughly, I mean, I did. I tried to figure out the war for each player.
Right.
You know, you add it to 48, and that's kind of the basic formula, and I came up with 92. The one thing I will say, the Tigers gave up 803 runs. If you're going to get to, let's just call it 90 wins, you've got to outscore your opponents by roughly 70, 75 runs. They gave up 800 runs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else was close in the American League. That number has to drop to closer to 700, and that's a big change in 1 year. It's a big improvement. I think it's possible. But that was the one thing that I keep getting back to that makes me maybe a little more cautious. In other words, we have to see it to believe it. I mean, they have to cut that number in a dramatic way this year. They have the capability to do that. So I'll stick with right around 90. I mean, that's optimistic, but I'm an optimist by nature. But I do think the talent is there to get there. I think sometimes you project 90 wins, and then you're just absolutely counting on every best-case scenario for every player to get there. That's not the case of this team.
Now, Dan, you had mentioned Jordan Zimmermann as kind of one of the pieces that could help the Tigers cut down on those 800 or so runs that they allowed last year. But I kind of want to put you on the spot here. What do you think was the Tigers' best move of the offseason?
I think one of the underrated moves, and just for shoring up the bullpen purposes, was picking up Justin Wilson. I don't think that's the key move, but I mean, to get a power arm to the left side who, I mean, cut his walk rate sharply last year while maintaining his strikeout and inning dominates lefties and righties. That's a great pickup for relative low cost, and it could be a huge piece of the bullpen. So to me, that's an underrated, very important move. Of all the moves that they made, that's a good question. I just think that the targeting guys and getting what you had a checklist of things to do, a to-do list, and he went out and got it done. But building up the back end of the bullpen to me is number one, because I think the offensive pieces were there for the most part. Adding up is really nice, but I really do believe without him, they still could have had a very good offense. With return to health and power, especially for Cabrera. But to build that back into the bullpen, if it really truly does pan out that you've got Lowe, Wilson, and K-Rod lining up in inning 7, 8, and 9, and you can bring them in at the start of an inning like Casey does with all their relievers, it seems like they're always coming in, bases empty to start an inning, and they all go one inning at a time. It's amazing
right. How
often they do that. If you can get to some kind of consistency like that, the bullpen depth all of a sudden now allows Hardy and Wilson to thrive in roles. Wilson's really good in multiple inning roles. Talk about Alex Wilson. And you've got, I think, a couple of other pieces that can fit in nicely. But if it early in the year for fans to look at, to me, if it's starting to line up that way, Lowe, Wilson, and K-Rod, or Wilson, Lowe, K-Rod, you're really going to, I think that makes it, it changes everything on this pitching staff in terms of the feel in the late innings, the confidence that a team has knowing they're shortening games. Because, you know, Jordan Zimmermann, a great pickup, but he's really a six-inning guy. Sanchez is really a six-inning guy. And it just puts all the more importance on, and I think Daniel Norris would be kind of a six-inning guy at this point in his career. And I think that puts all the more importance on those guys at the back end.
Well, I certainly think the bullpen could almost shave off those 100 runs that you were talking about all by themselves.
It really can. I mean, we've seen some amazing, I'm not sure what Kansas City has done is not many are going to replicate that. But other teams have put an emphasis on the bullpen and targeted the right guys. You still need those swing and miss guys, and the Tigers did not have a lot of those guys last year. Now they've got swing and miss guys. And you're right, it can change. It can change the feel in a big way, and it can help cut that big number down in a hurry.
Now, I know you were on Twitter when the Jordan Zimmerman signing took place, and you were obviously very high on the Zimmerman signing. You had some things to say about that from the statistical point of view. I wanted to probe just a little bit deeper and ask specifically about the Mike Pelfrey signing. Rob and I are having kind of a disagreement on this. I know I'm a lot higher on Pelfrey than some others are. I just think he has a real chance to break out with a better infield defense behind him, but I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Going into the postseason, I thought that Pelfrey was the guy. I've become convinced that to build the bullpen, you target hard-throwing former starters who maybe didn't have much success. Because if you really look at the best relievers, the Wade Davis, Luke Hochaver, you can kind of go right down the list of some of the very best relievers are former, quote-unquote, failed starters, whether it was in the minor leagues or major leagues, but especially major leagues. And they come out of the bullpen throwing harder. We saw Pelfrey twice. I think there were 2 7 strikeout games against the Tigers. This is I'm not usually big on low strikeout guys, but what we saw in those 2 games against the Tigers was power stuff, 94, 95, and swings and misses, which he apparently doesn't do against many other teams. And I know the Tigers have hit him hard as well, but it intrigued me. I thought maybe this is a guy, you put him in the bullpen. You know, Zach McAllister is another guy out of the bullpen now for Cleveland. Guys who throw hard and can come in and let it fly. I thought Pelfrey might make a perfect reliever. As a starter, I wasn't as excited, I'll be honest. But the fact that his fastball was as good as it's been in a long time, and there is a power arm, and that intrigues you because you think if he can get the strikeouts to 5.5, 6, then I think you've got something there because there is a durability factor. There's value in having those innings. But he has to get the strikeouts up. I don't think there's any question about that.
All right, so we've kind of talked about the starters, a little bit about the bullpen. We talked just briefly about the offense. Where do you feel like is the weakest link on this Tigers roster? And do they have enough depth in their farm system to help supplement the club if they need to, or do they have to look outside the organization for help at some point?
And that's one of the reasons I thought maybe, you know, before they signed Justin Upton, they probably wouldn't, to give them some flexibility at the trade deadline if need be. And I think that'll be harder to do if you've got a $200 million payroll. And then again, Mr. Ellis has made it clear that he's ready to spend whatever it takes to win if he thinks he's adding a piece that's going to do that. I would say, and I've looked at it a lot, and I think the lineup to me will be, I think there should be a top three offense, because last year it was first batting average, second and on base, fifth in slugging, 10th in runs scored. Vastly underperforming. If you're top five in those three categories, 1, 2, and 5 in the big three category, you should be a top three offense. And that was with injuries to Miguel, who fell off to 18 home runs, and V-Mart especially. But I do look at that lineup. If Upton hits second, you do, but there are definitely question marks at 6, 7, 8, and 9. And that means James McCann, Nick Castellanos have to improve this year. And young hitters can, you know, they can struggle at age 24, 25, second year, full year in the major leagues. So and that's why I think Upton some days will hit 6, just to lengthen that lineup a little bit. I do think this is a very good offense. But when you look at the lineup, when you see Kinsler, Upton, Cabrera, V-Mart, J.D. Martinez, 1 through 5, the bottom part does give you pause a little bit. But overall, I think it's going to be a very good offense. I think Sanchez, to me, is a key in the rotation, because if he struggles again, then I think there are real concerns about the rotation. If he's really good, I think Daniel Norris slots it really nicely. He'll be listed as the 5th starter, but really he's got, could be the 4th guy, I think, because his talent is, the upside is really high with Daniel Norris. That's why I think Sanchez is so important. Now you've got 1, 2, 3 lined up really well. And the depth there, I mean, I think pretty solid 1 through 5. And then the bullpen, I do think that's probably where they have the most depth in the farm system. I really do, because I think Michael Fulmer could help some point during the season. A lot of teams in the past, we haven't seen it as much recently, bring up, you know, future starters and work them out of the bullpen for half a season. They can make a huge impact. I think Fulmer could, based on the reports you hear of the power arm and the slider that he has. I think Shane Green could be a big piece out of the bullpen, assuming that we see the 2014 Shane Green and not the guy last year. The guy we saw last year was not the same guy as 2014, when he had, at times, electric swing-and-miss stuff. And that's why I think out of the bullpen, Shane Green might be really good and really important, because he can go multiple innings. And who knows, maybe even slots back into the rotation at some point if he's got that good health and he's got the good swing and miss stuff going out of the bullpen. So, I mean, if there's one area, I'd probably say the bullpen, because until you see the day-to-day and are they performing at the level that the team needs to be a contender and a 90-win team. And the one other thing I would mention, guys, and I don't think this is a small thing, base running has to be a lot better. And not just a little bit. Their base running was atrocious last year.
Yeah.
And it's not all about how much raw team speed you have. It's also just that knowledge and the ability to be smart when you take the extra base. But when they made slight improvements in 2014, in every way they fell back in 2015, whether it's taking the extra base, running into outs, grounding into double plays, I don't worry about because that's going to happen. But the outs they made, the inability to take an extra base going first to third and second to home, abysmal at the bottom of the league. They were not a good base-stealing team either, even though they finished, I think, fifth in stolen bases. So, I mean, by any measure, whether it's the Bill James handbook, whether it's just looking at the baseball reference, base-running stats, they were at the very bottom in the American League. And that costs you wins. It's not by accident that Texas was at the very top. They surprised everybody by getting to what was it, 87 or 88 wins. And Kansas City is consistently at the top year after year. It consistently outperforms what people expect them to do. It's things like that that can help you get those extra wins. But when you're as bad as the Tigers were, that cost them, I don't know, several wins, you would think, last year, as far below average as they were with their base run.
Now, let's back up a little bit here, kind of away from the diamond. When Al Avila was hired, he vowed to bring more statistical analysis into the front office. Have you noticed any differences so far in how he operates, particularly from a statistical standpoint, than Dave Dombrowski did when he was in charge of the Tigers here?
Not yet. I thought it was so significant that the first major pronouncement he made about how he's going to run things was, here's a guy from a scouting background, from a scouting family, for goodness sakes, who is one of the very best at scouting. And his first emphasis was on, we have a lot of catching up to do, I think were his words, in the analytics area. I haven't seen a whole lot in terms of how they're doing it yet, but just the fact that he's putting an emphasis on it, realizing the importance of it, talking with Sam Menzin, who is now joined by, well, three more additions to the office, Jay Santori and Andrew Koo. I think they have an intern who's also joined them. I mean, we're talking about, I was just struck reading the book Big Data Baseball, which is a fascinating read about the Pittsburgh Pirates' use of analytics to turn things around on a low budget, by the way, after 20 straight losing seasons. And the number of, the data points that people have to look at. And Sam was saying it's in the billions. It's literally in the billions of bits of information that you are now getting. So the teams that can figure out, the formulas, the algorithms, how to best use that to their advantage are the ones that maybe that's the next advantage. Because everybody's got the same information for the most part. Now, how to use that? So to put an emphasis on that is huge. I haven't seen a ton of, how they're going to use it. I believe, Al and Brad Austin have both said it's more about how you put the pieces together to build a team. But let's face it, Pittsburgh used it to be way ahead of the curve in use of defensive shifts, and they changed the way their pitchers, pitched so that they would have more ground ball pitchers with the shifts that they were using. And that was a huge change for them. So they used it to the game in and game out strategy. The Chicago Cubs have used analytics. I had a very interesting talk with Chris Bosio last summer, the pitching coach for the Cubs, about the guys. And look what they've done with Jason Hamill. Modest success, if at all, with Baltimore. Look what they've done with Jake Arrieta, who had middling to below average numbers with Baltimore before the Cubs got a hold of him. Even Pedro Strop. Look what they've done with guys who just had middling to no success in other organizations. But they target guys who, have certain, they're using the data to find those guys with high spin rates, who can pitch up and down in the strike zone rather than side to side. And they use the analytics to target certain types of pitchers who will pitch to their philosophy, but they also marry it with the scouting to make sure they're getting guys who are, amenable to coaching and are able to change their ways and buy into what they're trying to do. And I think that's what the Tigers are trying to do. Use the analytics, figure out all this data is coming in. How do you best put it to use in roster construction, but also the game-to-game, and then marry it with the scouting, because that's still going to be a big part of what you do. The Tigers love Jordan Zimmermann because he's a really good pitcher, but also for the person that he is, and that does make a difference.
You know, it's funny you bring up that book, Big Data. I know both Rob and I just recently read that over the last couple of months. And when I was reading
it's good, isn't it?
I was salivating as I'm reading these, you know, this story of how they managed to bring Big Data in and how they synchronized that with not only the players, but the coaches. And they had the coaches sitting in with the analysts.
Yeah, a lot of resistance.
Yes, but the way that they were able to smooth that out with communication. And so now I'm kind of curious, now knowing that you've read that, what popped into your head as you were reading that? Because I know for me, there were several points I'd reading and thinking, oh, wow, if the Tigers could only fill in the blank, you kind of want to apply that to the team. What popped into your head as you were reading that book?
I think what you just mentioned, that, you know, Clint Hurdle, a fascinating guy. I've gotten to know him a little bit because we play Pittsburgh every year. I love talking to him. But just the fact that they knew they had to do something dramatic, and the fact that he made sure that everybody, these guys are going to be in the clubhouse. But the key was they weren't just dictating to the players and coaches, but that because they were now in the clubhouse and a familiar face, the guys knew who they were, that they could say, okay, that's a good idea in general, but for this particular guy, whatever it might be that they were trying to do, maybe we shouldn't either shift or maybe we shouldn't have this guy pitching this way because that's not his strength. In other words, bringing up points that the analytics guys didn't know because they weren't looking at the scouting side, but more the numbers side, and that constant communication that you just mentioned, I think that struck me, and it just seems like if you're going to do it, you have to have that, and that's what kind of stood out to me.
Indeed, indeed. I'm hoping that the Tigers can pull off something very similar as they begin to kind of assimilate, you know, Big Data into their own organization. Dan, as we start to wrap things up here, a couple final questions here. This one's kind of it's a softball for you. Who do you think is the Tigers' biggest threat right now in the AL Central?
You know, I wanted to say the Tigers were the favorite over KC, but I look at KC and I think, you know what, they're the favorite for a reason. I mean, what they've done, you know, their last two postseason runs were so fun to watch. They've got something good going out there. They're outperforming what people expect. They're outperforming their expected one loss. They're outperforming projections. They've got something that... You know, another book that I'm recommending to anybody because I think it dovetails so beautifully with Big Data is called Intangible by Lonnie Wheeler. It's a really good read about the other side, the intangible side that we debate, but the examples that he brings up about you can't deny the impact that, and he goes through story after story, you know, a veteran has on a rookie, that mentor has on another player to help them learn the ways of being a big leaguer or learn the ways of playing a position. Or the character, a guy that joins a club, you know, the Johnny Gomes of the world, who adds something every year. I mean, it's a great read, and it dovetails to me really nicely with Big Data because there's always going to be that the other side. And Joe Maddon, there's a long chapter in there with his quotes about the importance that he attaches to the character side, the chemistry side, the intangible side that is quite real in his view. And so, I mean, there are those, that's why Kansas City to me is a team to beat. They've clearly hit on something. I think it's one of those things where the end result is more than the individuals. If you just look at them and say, well, that's about an 85-win team. Clearly, you know, you win 95 games because they do so many things right, but they play that team concept very well, and they've got guys who mesh very well. There's something to be said for that. So KC to me, they re-signed Gordon. Kennedy to me was a good signing for KC. Now, their rotation was 12th last year in the American League. I think the Tigers' rotation is better, but their base running is superior. Their defense is top-notch. Their bullpen is as good as it gets, and their lineup is good enough, especially with Gordon coming back. And that's why they're the team to beat. I think the Tigers can absolutely hang with them, but until they show that they can overtake them, Kansas City is the team to beat. Then I would put probably Cleveland next. I think the Tigers are better than Cleveland because I think they have more overall depth. I think Minnesota's intriguing, but I still think that rotation is full of holes. And I think Chicago just has way too many holes offensively. And that's why I would pick them probably fifth if you had to pick somebody fifth.
Well, so then I will look forward to a dogfight between the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. With I'm going to give the slight advantage to the Tigers in that one, just because I kind of have to say that, running a Tigers podcast and being the optimist that I am. I can't be doom and gloom.
Hey, we can't be optimistic now. When can we be, right?
Exactly. This is exactly my point, Dan. Save the doom and the gloom for at least May, April. Second week of April is a better time for it. No, because second week of April, that's usually when they rattle off about 10 wins in a row and everyone declares them to be pennant champions.
That's right. So, yeah, 11-2, they were going to run away with it last year.
Exactly. Well, Dan, it sounds a little strange to say, but we're talking about 2 weeks from today. You're going to be in Florida and actually calling a spring training game. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the start of a baseball season. I mean, I really do. I like all so much good writing out there. I like trying to figure out who's got what. And to me, there's really no one team in the American League that scares you. I think the race is so wide open. And the other thing you look forward to, I mean, there's a lot of good young talent coming into the game right now, and that makes for a lot of excitement. So I think there are some intriguing young players. I mean, that's what spring is for, just to get a look at some of these young players. And believe me, we get to see a lot of them because the regulars are usually gone by the fifth or sixth inning, right, and even sooner than that early in the spring. You know, the games, let's face it, the games sometimes are double-A guys and A-ball guys at the very end. But
right,
I love the start of a baseball season. I'm really interested to see how this team, the pieces come together. There aren't a lot of camp battles, but, you know, to watch Daniel Norris battle, I think he's the clear favorite. But I'm looking forward to seeing Michael Fulmer. I'm looking forward to seeing, don't forget about Matt Boyd. I think this kid's got some real upside. I know he doesn't grade out really highly, but he showed me some things. As bad as the numbers might look on paper, there's something there in that left arm of Matt Boyd. I'm looking forward to seeing Shane Green.
Yes.
Because he had electric stuff. Look at the quotes from Brandon McCarthy, his teammate with the Yankees in 14. He said, stupid electric stuff, I think is what he called it.
That's right.
We didn't see that last year. Even in the good start, we did not see the swing and miss stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And the development of guys like, you know, Drew Verhagen and Nick Castellanos, I'm intrigued. I don't know if Nick Castellanos is a 16-64 guy or a 25-85 guy. Hmm. But he's 24. He's not even 24 yet. And I do think he's got big-time power, and he's got the right approach, meaning he uses the big part of the field in right center. So, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to. And I love getting started.
Well, we are certainly looking forward to being able to finally tune in, even if it is just for spring training, but being able to tune into the radio and listen to you and Jim Price, of course, you know, and the sounds of baseball again. It's been a very long winter. So one quick final question before we hang up.
Yeah.
Now that you've had some time and distance to get away from that mess that was 2015, there were some moments there, I thought, that were, you know, you got to watch Miguel Cabrera hit career home run number 400. You got to see James McCann hit an inside the park home run. What was your kind of favorite moment that you got to witness in that very ugly season?
You really hit on two of them, but the Cabrera one was so good because it was his first shot at it. The rain was coming down. Right. I remember they might have even pulled the tarp shortly after that. I think they did. Maybe that was in Cincinnati, but it wasn't Cincinnati. But, I mean, the rain's coming down, first crack at it, and he hits 400. Mm. Straightaway center, of course.
Of course.
That was a beautiful moment. McCann inside the park, I can remember it very vividly because it just took that kick and hugged the wall in right center field and allowed him to circle the bases. And it's always fun when you say, they're waving him home.
Right.
The old George Kell, they're waving him home. So, I mean, those were two. I mean, and, you know, I to watch Justin Verlander, you know, dial it up and come back as strong as he did and, you know, hit 99 on the gun and in one outing toward the end. I mean, it was just fun to watch him start to start. Daniel Norris's home run in Chicago. Those two games in Chicago were a blast. Mm. I mean, I don't know what goes on with the Tigers at Wrigley, but if you look at their last three series there, it's just ridiculous. I mean, that's a good Cubs team, and they just destroyed them over 2 days. And Daniel Norris's home run, also to straightaway center, was, I don't think I've seen a Tiger pitcher hit a home run. As a matter of fact, I know I haven't. And he just bombed that ball to straightaway center. Then, of course, went out with the oblique. But to watch him come back from that oblique in September, it makes him really, you know, it was, what, a three-inning, a four-inning, and a five-inning start. But, I mean, over the course of two games, he retired 26 out of 27 batters. You know, they're taking it easy on the innings because of the oblique. But, I mean, that was exciting because you realized the upside with Daniel Norris is very high. And that kind of got you excited for this year. I mean, those are just some of the things off the top of my head. But there definitely were some highlights. And I think, you know, in a 74-win season, that was so disappointing. Those were some of them. I think the day-to-day consistency of Ian Kinsler is something that kind of gets overlooked. It's not really a highlight. But just, I mean, look at the years that Kinsler has had with Detroit. He has been under the radar a little bit because the numbers aren't eye-popping, but all he does is go out and play hard every day and play really well. And that's another reason why this team could be really good in 2016.
Well, I tell you, not only do I not remember a Tigers pitcher hitting a home run before, the last one I remember even hearing about was Mickey Lolich back in the late 60s. So maybe one of these days we'll get your partner Jim Price on the show and he can tell us all about that experience. So.
That's right.
Well, Dan, I really absolutely appreciate you coming on the show again. Hopefully we can touch base maybe midway through the season, at which point we can celebrate the fact that the Tigers are in first place and 12 games ahead of everybody else.
Give a call anytime.
All right. Thanks, Dan.